The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, I'm Carrie.
And I'm Josh.
And we're from Central Florida.
And we love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 358 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show, we have a round table of talented and very excited people. First of which is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I am much better than I have been, that's for sure.
I did some running today in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Last week it was negative 12. Today it was 58.
Yes. I wish I had the time. I would have loved to have run this weekend. Did not have the time, unfortunately.
Yeah. I have a shout out before you go on.
Yes.
It's to our buddy Wanda Byram, who went on the cruise with us.
Yes.
Super nice lady. And she's going through a tough time right now. And Wanda, we just want to say we're thinking of you.
Yes. Prayers to Wanda. Also joining us is Eve Vanderpool from Windermere, Florida. Hello, Eve.
Hello. I cheered on Princess Runners this morning.
Oh, that's right.
Why didn't you run, Eve? I was wondering. I noticed your husband ran in the Princess.
He did, and he finished like 134 something. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
But no, I run every year, but I just wasn't into running this year. I had so many other races this year too, so just didn't run. But I'm definitely running next year because I kind of had medal envy today. Yeah. Walking around the parks, everyone had like their aerial medal, and I'm like, oh, I really like aerial. So you know, but it's always inspiring to watch a race. It really is, like, just cheering everyone on, watching just everyone achieve.
Yeah.
It's so inspiring. I love that spectator aspect as well. So that was fun.
Speaking of spectators, we have Chris Eliopoulos with us as well. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Mike. Today's song from my playlist is the theme from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh, wow. Crap. Now that's going to be in my head for the rest of the night.
I just keep thinking of the turkey episode, the Thanksgiving episode, dropping the turkeys from the helicopter. So,
well, on this episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast, we are pleased as punch to bring on one of my favorite Disney people, a friend of mine, and he and I worked on a website a long time ago, and he is the author of The Secret Stories of Walt Disney World, Things You Never Knew, You Never Knew. He also has written The Vault of Walt and the Revised Vault of Walt, which is one of my favorite books of all time. He's also written a very, very interesting book, which I encourage a lot of people to go out, get, and read. It's called Who's Afraid of the Song of the South and Other Forbidden Disney Stories. And he's got a new book coming out, too, that I'm going to let him describe. And I'm talking about my friend Jim Corcus. Jim, welcome to the show.
Oh, gosh. I love Mickey Miles. And those of you who are listening, remember, if you run, you should always run toward the Mickey Miles podcast, because you're guaranteed to have a lot of fun and some wonderful Disney information.
That's the show. That's, I think that's all we need.
The check is in the mail.
That's awesome.
And Mike is going to be sending me $20 cash by mail this week, so I'll be looking forward to that. But no, it's wonderful to be on the show and with such wonderful Disney fans. You know, I asked an Imagineer one time, who was also a Disney animator, and I said, well, what do you collect? And he says, I collect friends, because Disney fans are the best in the world. You know, they're kind, they're passionate, they're enthusiastic. And that Imagineer and animator was a friend of mine, Bill Justice, who unfortunately passed away a while ago. But I think as I grow older, that becomes more and more important, that the Disney community offers a wonderful safe haven for so many people, and also so inspiring for dreams and hopes of the future.
I think that has to be the best opening by a guest that we've ever had. Oh my, I have goosebumps. That's wonderful. Wow.
Jim, I think before we get started, I was going to ask you if you could give sort of a, quote, elevator talk about your Disney background before we get into what I'm really excited about. So if you spend some time.
And so here's the Cliff Notes version of Jim Korkus, basically I grew up in Glendale, California, which is adjacent to Burbank, California, where the Disney Studios are. And as a teenager, 12, 13, I was very interested in animation, so I would watch the weekly Disney television show, and when the credits came up at the end, I would write them down, and then I would, the next day, I would go to the Glendale Burbank phone book and look up their names and phone these people up in hopes that they would tell me how to do animation, how to get a job as an animator. And 80% of them were just absolutely wonderful. 15% thought it was just a gag that their friends were playing. You know, yeah, a 12-year-old kid is saying, I like how you draw cartoons, ha, 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 ha. And then about 5% were wrong numbers. But from that, I was in the right place at the right time, so I got to interview an awful lot of animators and Imagineers. In fact, the very first one I interviewed lived in Glendale as well, Jack Hanna, who had written and animated and directed many of the classic Donald Duck cartoons, and he was kind enough to say, you know, you should be talking to Ward Kimball, and then he'd set that up. And so that is where my interest in Disney started, and I continued to write all of these things down that people were telling me and would be published in local newspapers and magazines. And then in But the big gag in Southern California was I was the most Disney person that people knew, but I was not working for Disney. You know, I knew Dave Smith. I'd been to the archives, but I was not working for Disney. I actually worked for Six Flags Magic Mountain. I actually did comic books for Warner Brothers Tiny Toons. I did all of these other things, but nothing for Disney. And then in 1995, my parents became ill with congestive heart failure, and I figured I could always get another job, but not another set of parents. And so I moved them out to Orlando, Florida, where my brothers were living. And, because L.A. had the smog, which caused respiratory problems, and there was just the stress of L.A. If any of you have been in L.A., you understand what that is. And so by moving them out to Orlando, gave them another 10 years of life, for which I was grateful for. But when you're out in Orlando, the only place you can find a job is the hospitality industry, which is restaurants or hotels or the theme parks. And so I started working at Downtown Disney, doing magic and balloon animals for drunk college students. Make me a hat with 50 balloons. I have a master's degree in theater arts. You're not making me happy. And then they'd throw up over my feet. And
I'm a college professor, and that's a really good imitation, I'm just going to say.
And then I moved over to Magic Kingdom, where I was Merlin the Magician doing the Soul of the Stone ceremony, looking for the new temporary ruler of Fantasyland. And on weekends, I was in Frontierland as Brush Becker Pat, an old gold miner. We're going on the wildest ride. And from there, I moved to the Disney Institute in 1996, where I was an animation instructor. And I taught all the animation classes, including Voices of Disney, showing you how to do, animated voice characters, but classical animation, computer animation, all of that. And then when the Disney Institute sort of imploded, I moved over to Disney Adult Discoveries, which were the behind-the-scenes tours, like Backstage Magic and Hidden Treasures of World Showcase. And then from there, I moved to Epcot, where I was a coordinator with college and international programs, because I'm a certificated teacher, and many of these kids needed to have legitimate classes by legitimate teachers in order to maintain their visa or get college credit. And then I moved to Disney Learning Center at Epcot, which was sort of a combination library and computer lab. And I was doing, excuse me, I was doing over 200 different presentations for cast members and Disney clients like Feld Entertainment and the military service and all of this on Disney history. And then, unfortunately, in 2009, that's when Disney decided to tighten its belt, and in 1 week, they let go well over 3,000 cast members. And despite me, you know, saying, look, I just won the Partners in Excellence Award. How can you let me go? They thanked me for my service, and there I went out the door. And I soon found that I couldn't even get a job saying, would you like fries with that? So I decided, okay, what are the assets that I have? And it was this rich background of Disney history and all of these people I had talked with and all the people I had interacted with at Walt Disney World. So I started writing books. And the very first book was The Vault of Walt, with a foreword by Diane Disney Miller, who had loved the writing that I had done on websites. And I thought, that's the only book I'll ever be able to write in my entire life. And now here we are, you know, 5 years later, and I have 10 books about Disney that are out there, and I have a new book coming out in March. It is called How to Be a Disney Historian: Tips from the Top Professionals. It has an introduction by Leonard Maltin. It has individual chapters by Dave Smith, who talks about how he created the Disney Archives and what the Disney Archives does, and you know, some cautionary words. There are chapters by Jeff Curdy, J.B. Kaufman, Jerry Beck, Greg Airbar, whatever. And this will be out in March. And this book is being done because we have so many people today who are interested in Disney history and creating their own websites or creating their own podcasts. But I find that a lot of them are doing cut-and-paste work and just, you know, going back to the usual sources, the usual suspects. So this book will hopefully help a new generation and hopefully some of the current Disney historians out there to reevaluate how to do what you do, and that there is so much more to explore out there. As Calvin said to his friend Hobbes, you know, there's treasure everywhere, you know, but you have to know how to look and where to find it. And the book is divided into three sections. The first section is the basics. In fact, one chapter is entitled Why the Disney Archives Will Never Hire You. And then the second section is Good Advice, which are these individual chapters from all of these wonderful ones. I tried to pick people that I really respected and loved. And then the third section is recommended resources, books and magazines and DVDs and, you know, a final word of advice. And so this I've just finished proofing the text, and this will be out in early March. And so look for it at themeparkpress.com and Amazon.com.
Jim,
and thank you for letting me plug the book.
Jim, you know, I was going to ask you, do you know if it'll be out in Kindle?
Yes. Yes, it will.
Ah.
Theme Park Press has over 100 books out now, and they have it both as print copies and in Kindle. And this year, they're also going to be working on developing audio copies of the books, because I know many people are interested in that. For me, I always love having, you know, a physical book in my hand. You know, I tell people that books are like sharks, because sharks existed even before the dinosaurs, you know, and sharks still exist today, because nothing is better than being a shark than a shark. And the same thing is with a book, you know. Nothing is better than having that physical book in your hand, and just the smell and the emotional feel of it and all of this. And I think even with all this electronic media that we have today, there's still going to be a wonderful future for books. And in fact, I look on my bookshelves and I have way too many books. And yet that doesn't stop me from adding more to it. And what a wonderful time to be a Disney fan, right? All of these books coming out, not just from Theme Park Press, but Disney editions, all of these wonderful books that are coming out. The only problem I have is, how am I going to afford all of these?
Exactly, exactly. I'm looking forward to that book. I already got that date circled on my calendar.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can I go first? So, sure. Jim, you've noticed that in these days we're starting to lose a lot of original, we've been losing a lot of original people who were around during the early years. How important is it now to really get those firsthand accounts, and how hard is it for you guys to seek out those people and get those new stories that maybe haven't been heard before?
What a great question. Yes, you know, for for many decades, you know, people worked at the Disney studios in anonymity. You know, believed that Walt Disney drew all of the cartoons and all of the comic strips, and on the weekend would go down with his hammer and build Disneyland all by himself. But there were tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who were involved with this, and the story of the Disney company is actually the story of people, and so it's so important to get their perspective and to get as many different perspectives as possible, because sometimes a person would be working on a project but they only saw their part of the project, they didn't see everything else. And Walt had a great tendency to use different teams to work on the same project without them knowing, so that he could pull the best ideas from each team. And one of the things that people listening should realize is there are probably people in the town where they are living who at one time worked at Disney, and even if they worked in the finance department or they worked as a janitor, they saw things, they experienced things, and we need to capture that, because a lot of these true stories are disappearing, and a lot of the people who knew Walt personally are long gone. Walt has pulled them to work on some big project in the sky. Fortunately, we still have some wonderful, articulate people around, like Marty Sklar and Robert Sherman and Floyd Norman and all that. But what concerns me is that people keep asking them the same questions. Right. You know, one of the great regrets that I have is, I met so many wonderful people, Ken Anderson, Bill Justice, whatever, but at the time, I didn't know what questions I really should be asking. You know, fortunately today we have so much research that we can go and get that. And even some of the next generation of Imagineers and animators that we have here that we're really not tapping into, you know, because some of them knew the original ones. You know, Tony Baxter, I consider the first Imagineer of the second generation of Imagineers, and he knew these people, and we really need to tap into the knowledge that he has, because Disney history is like a huge jigsaw puzzle, you know, and everybody's got different pieces, and if you start to share your pieces, sometimes some of those pieces will connect, and you get that bigger, broader picture of it, and it helps so much. I'm concerned that people are just accepting things that are considered urban legends, you know, simply because they've appeared in print, or they think it's true. You know, I just was with a group that took a Keys to the Kingdom tour, and I went along, but on these things I always bite my lip and, you know, keep my mouth shut, because, you know, that's their show. It's not my job to, you know, challenge them. But this guide, and she was wonderful. She was perky and enthusiastic, and you could tell she loved Disney. But she was saying things like, yes, on October 1st, when Roy Disney gave the dedication speech, and I'm thinking, Roy didn't give the dedication speech until 3 weeks later. And when she said, yes, on Walt's deathbed, you know, at St. Joseph's Hospital, he had his favorite pointer, and he was poking holes in the ceiling to indicate where he wanted things for Epcot. That never happened. Walt did look up and point at the ceiling, at the little spots and the lines and all that, and point out to Roy, you know, that's where I'm going to have this, that's where I'm going to have that. I think the biggest thing I ran into with the Keys to the Kingdom guide was where she said, oh, you see the train station there? That's where Walt had his apartment so he could look out over the park. And during a break, I said, you realize that Walt passed away in 1966, and the train station didn't get started building until January of 71. And she looked at me as if I was an idiot. You know, Disney must have approved these things. So yes, we need to get in touch with some of these original sources and get this information down, because we're losing it every minute, every hour, every day.
Join us next time as we continue our discussion with the amazing Jim Corcus, as we talk to Jim about not only the oldest structure in Walt Disney World, but perhaps the most valuable structure in Walt Disney World. So for Jim Corcus, for Eve Vanderpool, for Chris Aliopoulos, of course for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying, we will see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles and More podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.